Hi, this is Vikas Dubey, BA Part 2 Faculty of Social Sciences. Now, I'm going to record the next poet of the poetry, Robert Browning. Introduction. Robert Browning has been regarded as one of the most remarkable poets of the Victorian era. He was a highly original genius right from the beginning in his manner and in his versification or in his choice of subject. As Hugh Walker has pointed out, Browning has many poems in which beauty of style is conjoined with profundity of thought, and in these poems lies the hope of the performance of his fame. Life and works. Robert Browning was born in 1812, began to write poetry earlier. His Pauline appeared in 1833, and like his friend Tennyson, devoted his song life entirely to literature. He published Paracelsus in 1835, Stafford in 1837, Sordello in 1840, and a collection of dramatic and miscellaneous poems under the general title of Bells and Pomegranates. In the interval between 1841 and 1846, the last named year, he married Elizabeth Barrett, whose reputation as a poet then stood higher with the general reading world than his own, for like Wordsworth, he was a long time in the popular taste to the peculiarities of his method and style. The 15 happy years of his married life were spent in Italy, and during this period he wrote Christmas Eve and Eastern Day and Men and Women. After his wife's death in 1861, he settled again in England and published Dramatis Personae in 1864, and enormous dramatic narrative poems, The Ring and the Book, in four volumes in 1868 and 1869. By this time, he had completely conquered his public, and during the 20 remaining years of his life, his popularity was as great as Tennyson's. His fertility continued unabated, but except for occasional lyrics, it cannot be said that his numerous letter writings did anything to add to his reputation. His last volume, Asalando, was published on the very day, December 12, 1889, when he died in the Palazzo Rizzonico in Venice. Now, Robert Browning as a poet. First, the thought and philosophy. Browning's genius was dramatic as well as philosophical. He was gifted with an almost unlimited power of imagination, which was always expected upon real things that a human being can think or feel. He is realistic because he is never visionary. He ever deals with the human relations that make him a dramatic poet. He is dramatic because he deals with the character and conduct of men and women in a completely living form. But he is also philosophical at the same time, because he also analyzes the motives and spiritual and abstract truths which cannot be illustrated through human conduct and experiences. Second, his philosophical analysis. According to Mrs. Orr, everything which was as a poet he thinks and feels comes to him in a dramatic form. He presents not only a single character in solitude, but also a group of characters, and he can make each describe how he feels and thinks. In his most successful poems, he presents a character and makes him clear to us by means of soliloquy. By the soliloquy, he tries to reveal the philosophy of the inner conceptions of a special character. As Rylands points out, no great English poet since Shakespeare has shown such varied and subtle insight into human character. Third, his theme and philosophy. Browning frequently expresses his views on human life, like Wordsworth or Shelley. He comes to us with a more or less distinct theory of the relation of a man to the universe and exhibits this theory by means of imaginary characters and scenes. As it is known that he was not a profound philosopher, he had more of the air of a profound philosopher than a poet ought to wear. His interest is in the problems of life and thought. He is purely practical. He challenges a fair few of the old theological, metaphysical dogmas which have satisfied the spiritual needs of so many centuries. According to Rylands, he is distinctly conservative in his main position. He accepts the doctrines of personal God and personal immortality, and even perhaps the more specifically Christian doctrine of the incarnation. Fourth, his optimism. Browning is an optimist to the core. Like Carlyle, he preaches a doctrine of strenuous endeavor, but with more hope, with complete ideas, and with a wider sympathy for all sorts of good. He is not a mere ascetic, protesting against art and culture as well as folly. He finds all things good, though virtue is not the best. In apt Vogler, Rabbi good through virtue is not the best. Rabbi Ben Ezra and the epilogue to Asonolondo, we have the fullest and the most uncompromising statement of this faith. Fifth, his descriptions. Although he has written little continuous narrative poetry, yet in this department of his art, Browning takes a high rank. When he wants to put before us rapid and impetuous movement, he equals Scott at his best. There are several passages in The Ring and the Book which illustrate this and how they bore the good news alone is sufficient to prove it. His descriptions of scenery and natural objects are extraordinarily vivid. 6. His value. Browning is one of the chosen band who rolled back. So far as England is concerned, he expresses the morbid pessimism and he sickly disdain of active life, which has infected so much of European literature during the present century. Tennyson, Carlyle, Dickens, all in their different ways, have taught us the same lesson with the sense of appealing dignity more than Tennyson, less of a scornful denunciation and than Carlyle, and less of merely amiable sentiment than Dickens. He has shown to us how to look at life and death bravely in the face. Thus, Browning brings us into charity with all aspects of human nature, of him with more truth than of any other English poet. It may be said he saw life steadily and saw it whole. His lyrics have a charm of their own which marks them off from all others. To mention only two, no other poet has given us quite the same blending of richness and poignancy as we meet with in Home Thoughts About From Abroad. They have, besides all the essential qualities of the good love lyrics, in which he treats of all sets and varieties of love, married love, unsuccessful love, passionate love, and abnormal love. Nothing more thoroughly lyrical is to be found anywhere else. Style and diction. The style of Browning is not very easy. There is ambiguity and obscurity. It is said about him, he is careful of expression. Thus, often his style is telegraphic, the inverted construction abound. He writes tale first and all known rules of grammar and syntax are thrown to the wind. He makes excessive use of parentheses and broken or half-finished sentences. His stupendous learning and fondness of Latin quotation and expressions further complicate matters for his readers. Browning's style is clumsy in thought, but in his style he is mostly interlinked. There is an example of his paradoxical style. Let us begin and carry up this corpse, singing together. Browning's style is most autobiographical, too. What he feels and thinks, he presents as it is. So far as the diction of his poem is concerned, it is fine, effective, plain, and full of meaning, sometimes becoming clumsy due to the use of classical myths and Latin words, as his poems mostly are in soliloquy form. They present a different attitude. For example, "It is done. Take my mask off. Nay, be not Mars. It kills her, and this prevents song. It close." Thus, the language is neither too easy nor too difficult. It is mostly according to the subject matter. Now, the first poem of the Robert Browning, My Last Duchess. First of all, summary of the poem. The poem My Last Duchess, the poet Robert Browning expresses his idea about a duke. According to him, the Duke of Ferrara was a typical Italian resistance figure of 16th century. He was a hard-hearted person. He was vain, hard, proud, and hypocritical. He lost his duchess and wanted to marry again. A messenger of a rich count of his neighborhood came to him to settle with him the marriage of the count's daughter. The duke took the messenger around his picture gallery and showed him the portrait of his last duchess. He told him that the duchess smiled her thanks to everyone without any distinction. Her smiles, habits, and manner were not up to the mark of his royal dignity. He could not tolerate it for long, so he stopped her smiles all of a sudden and kept her portrait in the picture gallery. After finishing the story of the last duchess, he demanded from the messenger not only his master's daughter but also rich dowry too. हिंदी सारांश प्रस्तुत कविता मेरी अंतिम डचेस में कवि रॉबर्ट ब्राउनिंग अपना विचार एक राजा के बारे में प्रस्तुत करता है. उसके अनुसार फरेरा का राजा इटालियन पुनर्जागरण का विशेष चरित्र वाला व्यक्ति है. 16वीं शताब्दी का वह बहुत ही कठोर प्रवृत्ति का व्यक्ति है. वह व्यर्थ का कठोर घमंडी एवं दिखावा वाला व्यक्ति था. उसने अपने डचेस को खो दिया था और पुनः विवाह करना चाहता था. एक धनी राजा का संदेशवाहक आया हुआ था जो उसकी पुत्री का विवाह ड्यूक से कराना चाहता था. ड्यूक उस संदेशवाहक को अपने चित्रों की गैलरी में ले गया और उसे अपने अंतिम डचेस की तस्वीरें दिखाई. उसने संदेशवाहक को बताया कि वह हमेशा हंसती रहती थी और बिना किसी भेदभाव के सबको धन्यवाद देती थी. उसकी हंसी आदत और स्वभाव उच्च राजकीय परिवार की भांति नहीं था. वह उसे सहन नहीं कर सका तो उसने उसकी हंसी सदा के लिए एकाएक समाप्त कर दी और उसकी तस्वीर गैलरी में लगा दी. कथा समाप्त करने के पश्चात ड्यूक ने संदेशवाहक से कहा कि उसे मात्र काउंट की पुत्री ही नहीं अपितु भारी दहेज भी चाहिए. Now, the description of the poem. In the present poem, My Last Duchess, the poet Robert Browning expresses his idea about a duke. The poem is one of the finest and one of the remarkable dramatic monologues. It was published first in Dramatic Lyrics in 1812 and in the Dramatic Romances in 1813. The protagonist of the monologue is Duke of Ferrara, about whom it is not certain whether he is an actual historical figure or merely a typical Italian Renaissance figure. The theme and thought of the poem. The theme and the thought of the poem is very plain. The Duke of Ferrara was a hard-hearted person. He could not suffer the loss of the dignity of his royal family. The Duke's psychology is very strange. He did not like his Duchess to smile and give her thanks to everybody, but he could not bear that. The poem is a monologue where the Duke revealed his own feelings, that he did not like to free the action of a lady. The Duke told the nature of last Duchess and said that the last Duchess was so simple and innocent that she was at all conscious of her loyal blood and dignity, as the poet writes himself, "My gift of 900 years old name, with anybody's gift who had stooped to blame." Thus the Duke was pained. He wished that his Duchess should have maintained the dignity of his family without stooping so low. One day the Duke was too tired of her. Her smiles were stopped forever all of a sudden. The poet further writes, "Of mine for dowry will be disallowed, though his fair daughter's self as I avowed." When the messenger of nearby count came to him for the marriage of count's daughter of the Duke told him the whole history of last Duchess, and again said that though main aim of his was to obtain the beautiful daughter of the count, he would be pleased if his claim for a rich dowry was also acceded to. Thus, the poet reveals the character of the Duke of Ferrara. He proves what his character was, how he loved his dignity. He killed his wife, yet he wanted a lot of dowry. The Duke, a man of vain, proud and tyrannical nature, was contracted with the simple and good natural Duchess. Style and diction. The poem My Last Duchess is no doubt a great lyrical poem of Browning. It is in the form of a dramatic monologue. The style of the poem is descriptive, effective, narrative and deductive. The Duke of Ferrara describes his own feelings with all dignity. He uses all historical glamour and Italian Renaissance. Thus, the style of the poem is fantastic. So far as the diction of the poem is concerned, it is simple and epigrammatic and appropriate for the purpose. Every word of the poem has been chosen correctly and has its validity. The poem is lyrical and one can remember it very easily. The poem is written in couplets. He uses many figures, alliterations, similes and metaphors. Thus, the poem My Last Duchess is grand and fulfills the poet's aim. It has a great importance in the history of English poetic world. Now, the explanations with reference to the context. The opening stanza of the poem. "That's my last Duchess painted on the wall, looking as if she were alive. I call that piece a wonder. Now, Fra Pandolf's hands worked busily a day, and there she stands. Will it please you, sit and look at her? I said Fra Pandolf by design, for never read strangers like you that pictured continence, the depth and passion of its earnest glance, but to myself they turned, since none puts by the curtain I have drawn for you but I, and seemed as they would ask me if they durst how such a glance came there. So not the first are you to turn and ask thus, sir, was not her husband's presence now only called that spot. Reference: these lines have been taken from the poem My Last Duchess, composed by one of the greatest poets of the English of the Victorian era. Robert Browning. Context: in these particular lines, the poet Browning expresses his idea about the Duke of Ferrara. Now explanation: when the messenger of a count comes to the Duke of Ferrara with a proposal of marriage of the count's daughter, the duke shows him the lifelike portrait of his last wife painted on the wall. It is a wonderful piece of art painted in a day by an Italian painter named Fra Pandolf. He requested the messenger to sit down and have a look at the beautiful portrait of his last duchess. When the messenger is taken before the portrait and makes some queries about it from the duke, the latter resumes his dialogue with the former and tells him that the portrait was painted by a painter named Fra Pandolf. He accomplished that a number of visitors like him came, but none scrutinized the face of the duchess painted on the wall so beautifully, with profound emotions and sober looks. Every one turns to him for his comments, because it was the duke only that removes the curtain from the portrait. The visitors would ask him if they could know how the face of the duchess with such deep emotions and earnest look was painted, so he is not the first to ask him such questions about the portrait. Now the next stanza of the poem. Of joy into the duchess, cheek perhaps, Fra Pandolf chanced to say, her mantle laps over my lady's wrist too much, or paint must never hope to reproduce that faint half flush that dies along her throat. Such stuff was courtesy, she thought, and caused enough for calling up that spot of joy. She had a heart, how shall I say, too soon made glad, too easily impressed. She liked whatever she looked on, and her looks went everywhere. Reference will be same context. In these particular lines, the poet Robert Browning expresses his idea about the secret of his part of joy on the countenance of his last duchess. According to him, Fra Pandolf would have painted out its defects. Explanation: here the poet says that the blush painted on the face of the last duchess was caused not only by the presence of her husband, also by the words of praise uttered but by her admirers. The portrait was so perfect that none but Fra Pandolf would have painted out its defects. He would say that the cloak of the duchess overlapped her wrist too much. No painter he would ever succeed in reproducing that mean semi-blossomed blush caused by the words of courtesy by her admirers. When she was admired, she felt inflated, because she was a sweet, simple, and innocent woman. She was easily impressed and pleased. She liked and loved everything that came within her preview. Now the next stanza of the poem. Sir, it was all one, my favor at her breast, the dropping of the daylight in the west, the bow of cherries some officious fool broke in the orchard for her, the white mule she rode with round the terrace, all and each would draw from her alike the approving speech, or blush at least she thanked men good, but thanked somehow, I know not how, as if she ranked. my gift of a 900-year-old name with anybody's gift who had stooped to blame. This sort of trifling even had you skill. Reference will be seen. In these particular lines, the poet Robert Browning expresses his idea about the last duchess. According to him, the last duchess was so simple and innocent that she was not at all conscious of her loyal blood and dignity. Explanation. Here the Duke tells about the last duchess. Looks fell upon, impressed and pleased her. To her it was all the same whether it was an ornament presented to her by him or the slow green rise in the cast or the branch of cherries presented to her foolish admirer or the mule she rode with round the platform. She approved and praised everything without any discrimination. If anyone admired her or offered her a present, she blushed and thanked him. The Duke did not like this duchess to bend so low. When she put in the same class both the royal name of her husband's family and the gift of the ordinary man, the Duke was pained. He wished that in duchess, that his duchess should have maintained the dignity of his family without stooping so low. Now the next stanza of the poem. In a speech which I have not, to make your wit quite clear to such a one, and say just this or that is you disgust me, here you miss or there exceed the mark, and if she let herself be lessened so, nor plainly set her wits to yours for sooth her and made excuse, even then would be some stooping, and I choose never to stoop. Oh, sir, she smiled, no doubt, whenever I passed her, but who passed without much the same smile? This grew, I gave commands. Reference will be same. Context. In these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about the character of last duchess. According to him, the Duke of Ferrara tells the messenger of the Count that he was pleased with his duchess, for she did not maintain the dignity of his royal family. Explanation. Here, the Duke of Ferrara expresses his idea and says that she did not make any distinction between the high and the low, and the good and the bad. She smiles, he thanks to everyone, whosoever admires her. The Duke did not like it, nor did he like to suffer a loss of his dignity by criticizing her foolish conduct. He therefore put up with this indignity silently, even if he has been in his place and had been old enough to give his own comments on the foolish conduct of the Duchess. It would have amounted to stooping on his part. Even if he had painted out that in some respect the Duchess felt she had been troubled, any thank would have amounted to her stooping, which he had never approved. She smiled at the Duke when he praised her. She smiled at the commoner in the same way when he offered her a present. She did not make any distinction in the smiles. This continued for a long, though it was not up to the Duke's liking. When her conduct became intolerable to him, he commanded her not to smile in that fashion. Then her smiles came to a stop all of a sudden. She passed away from this world, leaving him behind to choose a new duchess of his own taste. Now, the last stanza of the poem. Then all smiles stoop together. There she stand, as if alive. Will it please you arise? We will meet the company below. Then I repeat, the count your master's known munificence is ample warrant that no just prince of mine for dowry will disallowed, though his fair daughter self as avowed. At steering is my object, nay, we will go together down. Sir, notice Neptune, though taming a seahorse, thought a rarity, which claws of Innsbruck cast in bronze for me. Reference will be seen. Context: in these particular lines, the poet Robert Browning expresses his idea about the Duke and his last Duchess. According to him, the last Duchess never made any distinction between the royal man and common person. Is the Duke used to ask her to change her behavior, but the Duchess brought no change in her, so he killed her. And again, the Duke of Ferrara gives his consent to get married to the daughter of a count with a hope that he would receive from the count a fair dowry in addition to his fair daughter. Explanation: the Duke tells the messenger that after the death of the Duchess, her portrait of full-size wall prepared, the portrait looked lifelike. It was kept there. He was sitting for its scrutiny. The Duke requested the messenger to stand up and go down. He told him once again that his claim for a rich dowry is the count, for he was reputed for his generosity. He further said that though the principal aim of his was to obtain the beautiful daughter of the count, he would be pleased if his claim for a rich dowry was accepted and also acceded to. Before they went down, the Duke asked the messenger of the count to have a look at the statue of Neptune, sea god domesticating a seahorse. The statue was a great piece of sculpture ever cast in bronze by the sculptor named Claus of Innsbruck. It was made especially for him. Thank you. This is the end of the poem. Now, the next poem of the Robert Browning, Two in the Campagna. In the poem Two in the Campagna, the poet Robert Browning presents very vivid validity of the Campagna. To the poet, the Campagna is a certain portion of the area which lies around the city of Rome. It is an area of steppes with malaria prevalent there. It is regarded as a ghost of the ancient Roman glory. It is an embodiment of the vanished civilization of the city of Rome. The speaker used to enjoy the sweet company of his beloved around the Campagna. The speaker used to sit with his beloved in the Campagna on the grass in the May spring. He asked his beloved if she too feels the same sensations. A thought occurs to his mind and he expresses it in verses. He compares his thought to the thread which a spider weaves across the path of a traveler and later feels irritation with its contact. This thought is intangible and delicate like the thread woven by a spider. He asks his beloved to grasp the thought to enable him to give it a concrete expression. He finds it difficult to grasp his thought by his own efforts, and he urges his beloved to help him in grasping it. His thoughts scatter among the yellowing fen, some old tombs, ruins, and yonder mead. The speaker sits upon the ground covered with the soft fleece-like grass. There is complete silence prevailing all over. Both the speaker and his beloved enjoy peace in a happy mood. The place was the center of vigorous activities with nature at its full beauty, and the sky looked from above at them. The speaker asks his beloved to express her feeling openly, like the sky looking at the base earth. It is beyond their power to control their feeling for each other. If they love each other, they cannot stop loving, and if they do not love each other, they cannot force them to love. His beloved is the whole thing to him in life. There is no fault in their mutual love for each other. Their love is not perfect because he wants something more besides her love. Their love occupies the supreme position in life. The lover wishes to act according to the desire of his beloved. He distinguishes between his attitudes towards his beloved and her attitude towards him. Their relationship is the supreme act of their life. But their love is not perfect and the wholly satisfying. He wishes to look at things from her point of view. He experiences the same passion as she does. He regards her as the very fountain of his life and is unmindful of the good or bad courage. The speaker cannot emulate the example of his beloved. He has higher aspirations. He holds a physical contact with her. He kisses her and draws comfort from the warmth of her heart. He wishes to identify himself with her. He feels that the moment of bliss has ended. There is no fixity about her love for him. He looks like the ball carried onwards by the winds, having no particular destination. He is unable to put up any resistance even to the smallest pressures. He looks for some favorable star in the sky to guide him and impart stability in his life to a large extent. The thread of the speaker's thought has disappeared. It was like a thread woven by a spider. He cherishes endless desire for eternity. He is not satisfied with the experience of the limited heart. His soul wants spiritual satisfaction, which may be obtained through a mystical contact with God. He desires for an experience of divine love. He is no more satisfied with the earthly love, which leaves him yearning for something higher. The spiritual longing becomes the last desire of his life. Hindi Saransh. Prastut Kavita Campagna mein Do के अंतर्गत कवि रॉबर्ट ब्राउनिंग ने कंपैग्ना स्थान में दो प्रेमियों का सुंदर एवं सजीव चित्रण किया है। कवि के अनुसार कंपैग्ना एक विशेष स्थान है जो रोम के नगर में स्थित है। यह क्षेत्र विचित्रता से भरा है। यह रोम में भूतों की कथाओं से भरी है। यह रोम की महानता के समाप्त होने की कथा को कहती है। यह स्थान महान सभ्यता की समाप्ति की कथा को कहती है। यह वक्ता अपनी प्रेमिका के साथ इस स्थान पर आनंद अनुभूति हेतु आता है। वक्ता अक्सर अपनी प्रेमिका के साथ कैंपेग्ना में सुनसान स्थान पर बैठने आता है। जब बसंत के घास उगे रहते हैं, वह अपनी प्रेमिका से कहता है कि क्या वह भी वैसी ही महसूस करती है। उसके मस्तिष्क में एक विचार उठता है और उसे वह कविता में व्यक्त करता है। वह अपने विचारों को की एक मकड़ी के धागे से तुलना करता है, जिसे वह यात्री के मार्ग में बुनता है। तत्पश्चात उसे बांधने का प्रयत्न करता है। यह विचार उसे एक नारी के बांधने के लिए अनुप्रेरित करता है। वह अपनी प्रेमिका से कहता है कि वह विचारों को ग्रहण करे, ताकि वह किसी विशेष पूर्ण भाव को प्रस्तुत कर सके, क्योंकि वह मात्र अपने पूर्ण भाव को नहीं प्रकट कर पा रहा है। और वह अपनी प्रेमिका से प्रार्थना करता है कि वह उसकी सहायता करे। वह विचारों में एकता नहीं ला पा रहा है। जैसे किसी पुराने मकबरे में दरारें पड़ जाती हैं, वैसे उसके विचारों में टूटन पड़ जाती है। वक्ता कोमल घास पर बैठा हुआ है। उसके चारों ओर पूर्णतः शांति छाई हुई है। वह और उसकी प्रेमिका दोनों ही शांति का आनंद उठा रहे हैं। वह स्थान प्रकृति के मध्य सुंदर प्रतीत हो रहा है। आकाश साफ एवं सुंदर है। वक्ता अपनी प्रेमिका से कहता है कि सुखद वातावरण में पृथ्वी आनंदित है। यह उसकी शक्ति से के बाहर है कि वे दोनों प्रेम करते हैं। वे प्रेम को नहीं रोक सकते। यदि वे दोनों प्रेम नहीं करते हैं तो वे एक दूसरे पर व्यक्ति का प्रयोग नहीं कर सकते। उसकी प्रेमिका उसके जीवन में सब कुछ थी। उनके आत्मिक प्रेम में कोई कमी न थी। उनके प्रेम पूर्ण नहीं थे क्योंकि वे सामान्य प्रेम से अधिक चाहते थे। वे अपने प्रेम को परम स्थान प्रदान करना चाहते थे। प्रेमी अपनी प्रेमिका के अनुरूप अपना प्रेम प्रस्तुत करना चाहता है। वह अपनी भाव अपनी प्रेमिका पर प्रस्तुत करना चाहता है और अपनी प्रेमिका का प्रेम अपने पर। उनके संबंध सर्वाधिक तथ्य हैं उनके जीवन में, किंतु उन्हें पूर्ण संतुष्टि नहीं है। वह उसके विचारों के अनुरूप अपने को ढालने की इच्छा व्यक्त करता है। वह उन्हीं भावनाओं को विकसित करता है जिनमें वह दृढ़ है। वह उसके जीवन की प्रारंभिक धारा का सम्मान करता है बिना किसी सोच के कि क्या अच्छा है और क्या बुरा है। वक्ता अपनी प्रेमिका को आत्मसात नहीं कर सकता क्योंकि उसकी भावना काफी ऊंची है। वह उससे शारीरिक संबंध भी बनाना चाहता है। वह उसका चुंबन लेता है और अपने हृदय को आनंद युक्त बनाता है। वह अपने साथ उसे जोड़ना चाहता है, किंतु उसे ऐसा प्रतीत होता है कि उसके आनंद की समाप्ति हो चुकी है। उसके प्रेम में कोई स्थिरता नहीं है। उसे ऐसा प्रतीत होता है मानो किसी बात को हवा उड़ा रही है। इससे उसके साध्य की प्राप्ति नहीं होगी। वह अपना कोई रोक एवं दबाव नहीं बना पा रहा है। वह किसी समुचित ग्रह की आशा करता है जो उसका दिशा निर्देशन करे और जो उसके जीवन में काफी दिनों तक स्थिर रहे। वक्ता की बातों एवं विचारों का घेरा उसे हताश ही कर रहा है। वह अपने विचारों को अनंत काल तक स्थायी बनाना चाहता है। वह तुच्छ भावनाओं में बांधना नहीं चाहता। उसका हृदय आध्यात्मिक संतुष्टि चाहता है ताकि वह ईश्वर के साथ संबंध स्थापित कर सके। वह आध्यात्मिक प्रेम का प्रयोग करना चाहता है। वह पार्थिव प्रेम से संतुष्ट नहीं है, इसलिए वह धागा बुनना त्याग देता है ताकि वह प्रेम को ऊंचा कर सके। वह अपने जीवन में आध्यात्मिक भावना प्रतिस्थापित करना चाहता है। Now, the introduction of the poem. The poem Two in the Compagna by Robert Browning has been presented first, Men and Women, and later appeared in the Domestic Lyric of 1868. The Compagna is an area lying around the city of Rome and is now in ruins. It has been considered as a sort of the ancient Roman glory. The poem Two in the Compagna reveals the inner thought of the lover and beloved. Compagna is a place which is fully bleak and barren, and it is used only as a meadow. It had a great glamour in the past, but nowadays it is the plain where no one comes commonly, but the speaker, the lover, along with his beloved, comes there to get the love of his beloved. In the first stanza of the poem, he asks, I wonder, do you feel today as I have felt since, hand in hand? We sat down on the grass to stray in a split better through the land. It proves that lover and beloved both have some sensation, and the lover wants to tie his beloved by the thread of thoughts as a spider weaves thread to check the passerby. He describes the place and says that the Compagna was a place where the glory and grandeur of the past could be seen, but now it has been fully ruined. Yet the lover asks his beloved what she feels. He further asks if she feels the same joy to recall the city of Rome with its abundant herbage and floral wealth. Now, the sensation of love, the atmosphere and the environment of the Compagna is still pleasing. The spring breeze is blowing gently through the place. It was so beautiful and full of starry flowers that God also saw it from the heaven. No doubt it was a heaven on the earth, As the poet says himself, such life here, through such length of hours, such miracles performed in play, such primal naked forms of flowers, such letting nature have her way, while heaven looks far from its tower. So he says, as the earth does not hide its barrenness to the sky, similarly, love cannot be cancelled or kept under control. The speaker is thinking how to gain divine love, but there is a great problem as to how it can be decided. To love or not to love. Human beings love or do not love according to the decrees of fate. His beloved is very important to the speaker. He loves his beloved in a natural way. It is beyond his control to love or not to love. He is not satisfied with the mutual love for each other. He catches the warmth of her love for some time, but the moment of a bliss soon ends. He feels that there is no fixity about his love for her. He considers himself like a ball to be carried onwards by the winds. He realizes that he has no particular end or destination. His approach becomes mystical and he experiences divine love. Earthly love leaves him yearning for the love of God. Philosophical thought of the poem. The beauty of love is the power of Lord. Where love is, there is real paradise. To him, it is merely the spiritual love that brings new sunrise. According to the poet, the conceit of love is too difficult to understand. The speaker is not satisfied with the earthly or physical love. It is because it contains only utter love. The poet wants to get the way of Lord. It is only possible where he possesses spiritual love. The love of a woman is only the means to achieve the love of Lord. The metaphysical yearning of the speaker compels him to seek the contact of God. All his previous love for the woman becomes inactive. Yet in the poem, a man's love for the woman becomes the noble aim of life. The concern of the poet is man's relationship with God. Thus his love of a woman leads him to the love of Lord. The fact of life. There are two types of love. One is physical and sensuous love, and the second is divine or spiritual love. Here, the poet has in the beginning physical love for his beloved, but soon after he realizes that mere physical love is not enough. It is limited, but a man can learn the value and validity of love through a woman's love to achieve his greatest destination, that is, no doubt, the spiritual love. The art and imagery of the poem. The poem is beautiful and has perfect imagery. He has drawn the picture of an open country with its endless fleece of feathery grass everywhere. So far as the diction of the poem is concerned, it is very fantastic. The words are simple but have sound and profound feelings. The felicity of the words and phrases in this poem is also interesting. The style of the poem is descriptive and deductive, full of philosophical thoughts and themes. Thus, the poem 2 in the Compagna is undoubtedly a remarkable poem that has been ever composed by Browning. Now, the explanation of the stanza with reference to the context. Now, first stanza of the poem. I wonder, do you feel today as I have felt since? Hand in hand, we sat down on the grass to stray in a spirit better through the land this morn of Rome and Maine. Reference. These lines have been taken from the poem Two in the Campagna, composed by one of the well-known poets, Robert Browning. Context: in the poem Two in the Campagna, the poet Robert Browning expresses his idea about the different conceptions of the love. In these lines, he presents his inner feeling about his beloved. Explanation: here the poet says about the lover who wants to know whether his beloved feels the same impulse to recall the city of home, Rome. They used to sit on the grass in the morning in the Roman Campagna. Now the next stanza of the poem: for me, I touched a thought I know has tantalized me many times, like turns of thread the spider threw, mocking across our path. For rhymes, to catch at and let go. Context: in these particular lines, the poet Robert Browning expresses his idea about the lover and beloved. They are sitting in the grassy land of Campagna. Explanation: here the poet says that the speaker, the lover, thinks a thought, and such a type of thought comes to him many times. He compares their particular thoughts to the thread which a spider weaves across the path of a traveler who feels irritated by his contact with it. Now the next stanza of the poem: help me to hold it first in left, the yellowing funnel run to seed there, branching from the brickwork's cleft, some old Tom's ruin, yonder weed took up the floating weft. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about a lover and beloved who are sitting on the grassy land of Campagna. The lover is thinking a vicarious thought. Explanation: here the lover thinks a vicarious thought, but he is not able to solve the problems. So he says to his beloved to help him in grasping it. He compares his thought to a floating wave. He follows the movement of his thought over various places. The thought is as tangible and delicate as the thread woven by a spider. Now the next stanza of the poem: where one small orange cup amazed, five beetles blind and green they grow, among the honey meal and last, everywhere on the grassy slope, I traced it, hold it fast. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet Robert Browning expresses his idea about a lover and his beloved. According to him, the place Campagna is a grass field, and he has a thought of complexity. Explanation: here the poet says that the thought by a rapid movement left the lover's mind settled upon the yellow flowering herbs in the distance. It moves on to some to old tools ruin and to meet far away, where fine beetles were gathered searching for food. The thought of the speaker may be traced all over the grass-covered slope. Now the next stanza of the poem: the Campagna with its endless fleece of feathery grasses everywhere, silence and passion, joy and peace, an everlasting wash of air, Rome's ghost since her decease. Reference will be seen. Context: in these particular lines, the poet Robert Browning expresses his idea about the previous joy of the place. Here the speaker asks his beloved if she feels the same joy to recall the city of Rome with its abundant herbage and floral wealth. Explanation: here the poet says that the speaker used to sit with his beloved on the soft fleece-like grass. There is complete silence prevailing in the atmosphere. The speaker and his peace-loving beloved are in a happy mood. They experience mutual passion while the breeze blows gently. The whole scene represents the ruin of ancient Rome and seems to be the ghost of the past glory of the Roman Empire. Now the next stanza of the poem. Such life here, through such length of hour. Such miracles performed in play, such primal naked forms of flowers, such letting nature have her way, while heaven looks from its towers. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet Robert Browning expresses his idea about the past glory of Roman Empire. According to him, the lover is seeking the glory, but he compares it with a ghost. Explanation: here the poet says how glorious and how great and how flourishing the Roman Empire was, how beautiful flowers blossomed at this place. Nature freely manifests itself without any interference from man. Heaven, as a living eternity, looks from above at the happiness on the earth. Nature reveals herself in various forms and shapes on the earth through the herbs, plants, weeds and grass, etc. Now the next stanza of the poem. How say you, let us, O my dove, let us be unashamed of soul, as earth lies bare to heaven above, how is it under our control, to love or not to love? Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet Browning expresses his idea about the value and validity of companionship, where the lover and beloved both are making their love for each other. To them, this is the places where they present their love without any difficulty. Now explanation. Here in these lines, the speaker tells his beloved that they should feel no shame in the expression of their love. They should be frank and candid in the confession of their love to each other, like the earth, which is fully exposed to the sky. The earth does not check itself. The speaker wants to remove the drawbacks in their mutual love for each other. Now the next stanza of the poem. I would that you mere all to me, you that are just so much, no more, nor yours, nor mine, nor slave, nor free. Where does the fault lie? What the core of this wound, since wound must be, I would I could adopt. Now, reference will be same and context. In these particular lines, the poet Browning expresses his idea about the love which the lover wants at any cost from his beloved, but he is in a great conceit to love or not to love. Finally, he gets an answer that he should love, but love should be the spiritual love. Explanation: here the lover wishes that his beloved should be all to him. He needs nothing except her love, but at the next moment he says that their love is not perfect. Their relationship suffers from a certain setback, which prevents the love from occupying the supreme position in life. Nothing is yours and mine. We are neither slave nor free, and we have done no wrong. So there should not be worry whether you have wounded or not. Now the next stanza of the poem. I would I could adopt your will, see with your eyes and set my heart beating by yours and drink my fill. At your soul's springs, your part my part, in life, nor good and ill. Reference will be same. Context: in these particular lines, the poet Browning expresses his idea about the lover and beloved. According to him, the love which he has in is not perfect. He wants something more. Here he presents his ideas about that love. Explanation: here the poet says that the lover wishes to act according to the point of view of his beloved. He draws a distinction in their love. He experiences the same passion which she experiences. He regards her to be the very fountain of his life. He has much higher aspirations. It is because the life is full of good and bad things. So he wants to lead a happy life only. Now the next stanza of the poem. No, I yearn. Upward, touch you close, then stand away. I kiss your cheek. Catch your soul's warmth, I pluck the rose, and love it more than tongue can speak. Then the good minute goes. Reference will be same. In these particular lines, the poet expresses his idea about the love of the lover and beloved. According to him, the lover wants a kind of physical love from his beloved. Explanation. Here the lover says that he wants to love his beloved. He tries to attain that desire of his heart. He wants to have close physical contact with her. He kisses her and draws much comfort from the warmth of her heart. He may satisfy her the desire of his heart like a man plucking a rose and cherishes it with profound feeling, but the moment of bliss soon ends and the pleasure of her contact vanishes. Now the next stanza of the poem. Already, how am I so far? Out of that minute, must I go still like the thistle ball? No bar, onward whenever light winds blow, fixed by no friendly star. Reference will be same context. In these particular lines, the poet Browning expresses his idea about the lover and beloved and their attitude towards love. Explanation. Here the poet says that the moment of bliss which the speaker enjoys by his contact with his beloved soon ends. He feels sorry at the loss of the bliss which he enjoyed in the company of his beloved. He wants perpetual bliss to avoid the loss of separation. He compares his destiny to the destiny of a thistle ball, which is carried away by a light stroke of wind. He is unable to resist the small pressure. Now the last stanza of the poem. Just when I seemed about to learn, where is the thread now? Off again the old trick, only I discern infinite passion and the pain of finite hearts that yearn. Reference will be same. Context. In these particular lines, the poet expresses his ideas about the spiritual love which the speaker wants, because only the physical love is not now enough to him. Explanation. As the speaker seeks for a favorable star in the sky to guide him and impart stability in his life, the thread of his thought has disappeared. He perceives the endless desire for eternity. Earthly desire cannot be fulfilled completely. His soul demands some spiritual satisfaction which may be obtained by a mystical contact with God. He discards the comforts in the love of his beloved and longs for the spiritual bliss. He is not satisfied with the earthly love. Thank you. This is the end of the poem 2 in the compagna.